It's often a misnomer that people think, well, just because I know a lot, if I know a lot, that means I don't say that I don't know a lot. But the more you learn, the more you recognize, the more you don't know.
Hello, and welcome to Salesforce Trails and Trials, where two Salesforce architects and special guests share their wins and woes so that you can learn with us.
On today's episode, I'll be talking about what I learned lately in terms of DevPro sandboxes, tracking changes. Even an admin can see that. And also tools of the trail. I'm going to mention a tool that I think is pretty cool. Keeps me up at night. Let's just say that.
And I'm going to chat a little bit about order on behalf of with Commerce Cloud and a little psychological hook to smoke out changes in sandboxes that have become idle. A little tool you can use on Chrome to help pages run faster in both inside and outside of Salesforce, and a presentation coming up at a great community event here on the West Coast. Good afternoon, another beautiful day.
Good afternoon, it is. How you been?
I've been great, you know, lots of good pickleball this week. It's excellent. And it's been fun to, you know, continue to, you know, look through the next release and just, you know, continue working on, went live with a really significant project last week.
Congratulations.
Excellent. I'll talk a little bit about some learning about it a little bit later in the episode, but it's been really fun and it's gone really well. It's great.
Great. As for me, aside from a bunch of work this week, which you'll probably hear about, one of my side hobbies is sourdough. And so I made some bagels, I made some bread loaves, and I'm bringing them to my parents this weekend. My dad always loves it when I do that. You know, it's been a good week where working from home is great because you can sneak in baking a loaf of bread. Mm-hmm, you know, I can't do that normally, but that worked out well this week.
Yeah, I love that new Salesforce policy that's going to let a lot more loaves be baked.
Yeah.
Now, I can't wait to get my hands on one of those because, you know, you get a little sourdough, a little butter, and then some good, you know, raw honey. That's,
oh my God, make my mouth
a
water.
Good mix.
Sounds
that's
good.
A good mix. Right. Yeah. Sorry, everyone, that we're getting you started without getting very hungry. So let's
food podcast next.
Right. I know it. Exactly. It's great. We had pizza 2 episodes ago. So
that's right.
I love it. No, I just love the holistic aspect. So let's talk a little bit about, what you learned lately.
Many people might know that the right way to deploy changes to production at a mid-sized company to enterprise company level is to script it. You automate it. You basically, you know, make your changes in a sandbox, push it from one sandbox to the next, do your testing, and then push it from that sandbox to a staging environment, from staging to production. There's been a way to do that forever. I mean, there used to be an Apache tool called Ant that was used and used a Salesforce metadata API to do it. And it was pretty... most people didn't know how to do it, but it was doable starting around 2007, 8, 9. And in the past few 4 years, we've had Salesforce DX, which has a great way to extract whatever you specify out of an org, bring it down, put it in, or check it over into code, you know, into GitHub, or put it there and check it in with Git. So the automation that is possible now with moving stuff between environments is amazing. And to the point where I have a project internally where I'm looking at creating a template for a particular way to demonstrate Salesforce. And when we need it, we just want to click a button, spin it up. And we already could do that, but I want to spin up the normal thing. And then I want to add my little flavor on top. Mm-hmm. I want to auto deploy a package into a Salesforce instance. So, and this comes up with my customers a lot where they're saying, you know, I have a particular kind of instance, or here's my production environment, and I want to create a scratch org or something that lets me, it just gets populated with all my key objects and the thing I want to work on right now. And I can spin up the environment and I can work on it. And then when I'm done, I can check all my changes into production and then be done. So I'm looking at using that process myself. And I guess the thing I knew happened, but I forget so much because I learned so much, if I can say that humbly, but there's so much that I know happens at some point when it comes out, but I don't use it. And what I'm looking at using now is the DevPro sandbox type, which to me never really differentiated itself much from the dev sandbox, except for size. Mm-hmm. The DevPro sandbox has now an ability to track changes of your metadata in your code. And that's super handy, especially if you're looking to get the thing you just customized out of a sandbox and into source code control, because you can make your changes in the sandbox, configure it, code it, whatever. And all the while, it's tracking what you did. And then using SFDX, you can say, go get me the stuff that changed, or what's the list of the stuff that changed?
Nice.
And you can pull that list out much more easily than having to keep, I don't know, a notepad open and just making notes about the things you changed and added and things like that. So that, along with something else that's coming soon, I think it'll be GA this summer. It's called DevOps Center. And DevOps Center is a way to, it's, you know, connect your sandboxes, watch them, see what's changed, jump into a sandbox from the DevOps Center. So it's sort of like a sandbox organization home, and, you know, watch a project go through from a use case through changes across sandboxes all the way to production. It'll just be something we get charged for. There's also going to be a free component. They haven't figured that out yet. But it's something like, altogether, I like what's happening for our admins, so they can easily track what's changing.
That's super cool. And I think for those who want to go even deeper, right, there's on the Scratch org side, for people who are going to use that, you have something called source tracked projects. It could even go further than that, but it's great that they're making it available in a sandbox to be able to take advantage of that. And that's super cool. I didn't know that specifically about a developer pro as well. I thought it was just about data storage.
Yeah, I think we're already at a point now where developers can do what they need to do from a source code control and migration capability, with some exceptions. The metadata API covers like 95% of what you need to do, but there's still stuff you have to do in production, which is frustrating for those few things that exist. But you can deploy change pretty easily, and you can go pretty far with the deploy tools. Do you agree with that? What is your honest opinion, having done a lot of migrations?
Yeah, I do agree. And Salesforce provides a really good metadata, the metadata API description highlights exactly what's available, and it's being updated all the time. And so I think
there's a list where you can go check and say,
yes,
hey, is my thing covered by the metadata API or packages? And I love that that's public.
Yes. Exactly. I agree. So it makes it very clear. So you can create your kind of post-deployment, you know, workbook and say, okay, you know, these are the things you could go over. We can't put, for example, chatbot dialogues are not yet deployable. And so we just come up with a path to, you know, figure out the import or whatever to do that, but it'll get there. And it's, you know, every release introduces more metadata. Right. So there's constantly going to be this moving target, which I understand.
Yeah. I think it's called the metadata coverage report. I think that's
you can Google it. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. Exactly. Very good.
So that's super nerdy. But what I learned this week is like, all right. And I know there's a lot of work going, like I said, developers already have a pretty solid path to automating their migration of change up the sandbox chain all the way to production. Point and click admins. It's not been the way they worked traditionally. I mean, you use a change set and you push your change set from your sandbox to production, but you got to get that method working with the way developers work. And so we're trying to make it so that we can bring those two sides of the business together in the way they manage your source code control. So
it's good. The path to DevOps there is really good. Well, that's excellent. You know, so I mentioned earlier that we had a go live for a large retail project, and this was really one of our first times, kind of engaging with Commerce Cloud and MuleSoft and just all of the details around, you know, kind of a front end. We were handling the Service Cloud component of this kind of large retail element here in the US. And I just found it, a couple of things specifically around, you know, the whole process of going live with Commerce Cloud and all of the details around those product pages and you know, testing load times. And, you know, one of the tools of the trail as a new segment we'll have later in this episode that we'll talk about relates to, you know, how to verify this. But I found it was cool. And the one feature of it was Commerce Cloud has a feature called Order on Behalf of. So it's essentially a set of API calls that you can, from Service Cloud, if you have, you know, kind of their customer ID, you can just create a simple little button that, there's a little lightning component behind the scenes, and it just like uses the API and then logs in the service agent into the customer's account. So now they can go through and whatever they need to do, if they need to cancel an order for them, or they need to create a new order for them, adjust the quantity, whatever they can do in Commerce Cloud when they're logged in, the agent can do on their behalf. And that way, whatever's done stays in their account. It's part of their order history, and it's as if they did it themselves, which I thought was a really clever way to do it. And really, it didn't take very long to implement. I was really surprised how straightforward it was from the, you know, the API standpoint between Service Cloud and Commerce Cloud. It's really a, very, very cool. A cool piece of learning.
You've got your hands on more Commerce Cloud than I have. That's pretty cool.
It's fun. It's a neat product, and I can see right why it was so favorable, right, for Salesforce to pick up Demandware and kind of bring it in-house, because there's a ton of that e-commerce space, and that was even pre-COVID, right? I mean, right. The whole pandemic, it's just it's on fire as far as what people need to be doing. So good stuff. Cool, man. For our next segment here, let's talk about that one small thing that could have big consequences.
That sounds good.
So this week, I thought we'd talk about something I don't know if it's little known or just little noticed. Because I think anybody who deals with sandboxes, they've seen this before, mm-hmm. and they probably just check it, or, you know, they just don't think about it. And so it's little noticed.
Yeah, there's a bunch of pop-ups that I see when I'm creating custom fields where I'm just like, click yes, you know, yes, right. Yes, keep going. You know, do you want the default security? Watch out, you're changing the field name. There's a pop-up. Yes,
I know. Right.
Yes. You just click through it, and I can't tell you what the error message is, but I know you've done it 1,000 times. Right. Yeah, so you're talking about one of those.
Yes, so this one is on... So first of all, a sandbox, like you were talking earlier, for the kind of point-and-click admins, right? The sandbox and change sets, et cetera, are often how changes are introduced. They should be. We shouldn't be working directly in production unless we absolutely have to, right? Mm-hmm. Now, let's say you've been working in, or a few people have been working in a sandbox for a bit, and then maybe people go on vacation, you know, and then 3 months, 3 weeks, whatever it might be later, people come back and they're like, hey, you know, there's other sandboxes have deployed things into production. And now this particular sandbox is out of date. Hey guys, mm-hmm. we should refresh it. Okay. Right. So maybe they, you know, put something on Slack and they're like, hey, we want to refresh the sandbox. So they go, they refresh it, and they check a little box on that refresh screen that's called auto activate sandbox. And what that means is, okay, when I refresh the sandbox, it actually takes the metadata from production and puts it into the sandbox, but it doesn't make it accessible yet when you log in.
It gives you like a second to breathe.
Exactly. It gives you like to say, okay, the sandbox refresh is done, and it's like behind the scenes, it's queued up. Right. So as soon as you click this link, swap over, as soon as you click this link to activate those changes that we've queued up, we'll do it, right? And so it offers this convenient checkbox that you just check it there. And what it'll do is it'll queue up the changes and then automatically activate them for you, replacing all the prior work. Now,
that is unretrievable.
Irretrievable. Exactly.
Once your sandbox has been updated, that other one is gone.
It's gone, right? So unless you've, you know, backed up the metadata and, you know, done what you can there, it's gone. And I think that's why I wanted to chat. Some significant things can happen if you use that checkbox. It seems like a convenience, but I think in many ways it can be a massive loss and detriment to the business to use it.
So know what the power is, I feel like, is where you're going.
Maybe, know what the power is.
Okay.
Yes. And I think there's another element here too, which is really dealing with so much of, you know, Salesforce is an amazing platform because it offers people who are really like people focused, like user experience, you know, kind of functional admins. Like they're very focused on like, what do people actually do in their environments, right?
Yep.
The mobile side. And then there's also the tech side, right? Which is like, okay, what's all this automation behind the scenes, things like that. This one, there's a psychological aspect to this. So have you ever been in a business and they say, okay, guys, we're going to refresh the sandbox. And everybody goes, uh-huh, moving on. Anyways, whatever. Okay. They say, sure, thumbs up. And then I want you to run a test. I want you to not check that auto activate box, refresh the sandbox, and then go back to that Slack channel and say, okay, everyone, the sandbox has been refreshed. And just wait a few minutes. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And what do you think you're going to hear?
Oh, wait, no.
Exactly. Is it gone?
Oh, no.
Right? I had, you know, I had like some visual force in there. I had a lightning component I was working on. You know, I created a staging object in there. Crap, is it gone? Well, if you check the auto activate sandbox, it's gone. But if you didn't and you understood human behavior, that people don't keep good notes, they don't always create a change set when they make their changes at the time. They don't keep good records. And so the time they remember is when they realize it's gone.
Yeah.
And so use that. Use that to your benefit. Use that to your benefit, where you can say it's gone, meaning technically it's true, it's refreshed, but it's not activated yet. But you can smoke out those changes from your users by saying it's gone, and then be the hero. And you're like, okay, thank you for telling me. I'll see what I can do. And you go back and you fish out what you need, deploy it, do whatever you need to do, and then activate the sandbox.
That's awesome. That's, I don't know what rule that is and what should be our life, you know, rules to live by, but it's lower the bar for everybody's expectations.
Yes.
And they're going, no, it's lost. And then you come back and say, oh, let me see what I can do. I don't know. Exactly. And then you come back and, you know, you can be a winner. That's awesome. And that's something I also like, and this is totally targeted at the admins. That is, I think it's a great tip. That's something I've never come across myself because I don't demo that side of Salesforce very often, but I know you see it in your implementations. And I think that story is awesome.
Right. Yeah. It's under promise and over deliver. Right.
There we go.
Yeah. So that's how you can be a hero, both for your internal dev team, right? Who put that stuff in there and then would have lost it. And I've actually seen projects where the auto activate checkbox was used, and there's like many, many thousands of dollars that gets lost because, an offshore team did a lot of work and it wasn't clearly, you know, like it, maybe it wasn't even visible, obvious in the audit trail, and they weren't available when they needed to refresh. You know, it's just like, there's a lot of reasons it could happen.
Is there another use case here for that, which is parallelizing my sandbox prep? Like if I know that I need a new sandbox on Friday, I should actually request a new sandbox on Wednesday, but not auto-activate it. Let it do the work in the background. Let my developers keep working in their current sandbox, getting all the stuff out. And then on Friday, I can go, boop, activate, and it's ready to go.
That's a great way. That's a great way to do it, because sometimes there's no SLA with Salesforce. So sometimes sandboxes can take a while. So it gives yourself
a problem with really big instances of Salesforce. Exactly. I don't know that if it happens very often. It also depends on the size of your sandbox you're asking for. But a full copy, I mean, some of my customers have a billion records in Salesforce and it takes a week or, you know, it takes a while to get some huge sandboxes. Most sandboxes, I don't know, a couple hours.
It depends on demand as well. It's kind of like DSL, right? Like if certain cycles, right? People are requesting a lot of sandboxes, it's going to get to it when it gets to it, right?
Yeah.
The sandbox service. But it's a good point. And I think it's a good topic for another episode, which is just thinking about like, what does our pipeline look like? So not only is there that schedule and life cycle of a sandbox, but what is our overall kind of, change control pipeline look like? Who should, you know, how many sandboxes should we have? How should we use Scratch orgs instead of sandboxes? Because really that's where Salesforce wants to go. They give you a lot more power. For example, we talked about it in episode 1 or 2, I believe, which is Scratch orgs give you the ability to turn on features that you do not license in your main production org. So when you want to say, hey, how does this work with financial services cloud, but we don't yet license that, but I want to know because we may in the future, right? That's a way for you to get that done in your Scratch org, where your sandbox would not be able to take advantage of that, right?
Yeah, that's really good.
So it's we can talk about that architecture and whether, you know, you should have one per developer or one per team, or, you know, how you record those changes so you can have some documentation. Good topic. And so please avoid the auto activate checkbox, never use it, but you can still leverage the reality that that has been refreshed for the sake of smoking out uncaught changes that people don't realize until they.
That's a good real life one. I think it's good.
Oh, cool. So let's talk about, we have a new segment here. We have some listeners who've requested to say, you know, we would love, you guys have talked about some tools. We would love to know a little more detail about some of the tools of the trail that you guys make use of, and that how they would help kind of, enhance their world as they're working on Salesforce projects. So I think you have a tool of the trail that you wanted to chat with that keeps you up late at night.
Yeah. So when you brought this idea up, I instantly thought of like 2 or 3 different tools. I was like, well, let's go and talk about this one or this one. And as you said, you know, I think I touched a nerve. I mean, you really did it. I went from uninspired to like talking about 5 different topics. So we'll drip those out over the next couple episodes. But the first one that comes to mind, specifically because of the word trail in this section, is Trailhead Go. And you may know what it is, but you may not. Trailhead Go is an iOS Android mobile app for Trailhead. And on the one hand, you could be saying, oh my gosh, seriously, dude, you're telling me about Trailhead? And my answer is, I use Trailhead. Trailhead is where we employees get trained on all of the Salesforce products. We don't get, like, we may get early license access, but we don't get early documentation access beyond a couple of weeks before everybody else. But when the trails come out for everybody at the same time. So if you want to learn about MuleSoft or integration or whatever, Marketing Cloud, it's all out there. And I was telling you that a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, enterprise Apex development tools or methods and separation of concerns. And this was like episode one or two. And I needed to learn about that. And I kept not finding time in my day when I could sit down at my computer and go to Trailhead. And I knew that these trails were mostly learning and quizzes. They weren't the Trailhead org. Mm-hmm. Where you open a playground and you actually do some customization. Mm-hmm. So I knew it wasn't those kind of trails. And so I realized, oh my gosh, I can read it tonight when I go, after my daughter goes to bed, I can go sit in my room and pull up my iPad and get to my trails and get to my homework when, or if I drop her off at gymnastics or whatever, I'm sitting in the car and I'm just like, I got an hour. I can finally get to this reading I meant to get to, whatever it is. As I've said so many times at Salesforce, and I haven't said it on this thing before, you are 3 hours away from being above average in your knowledge about any topic in Salesforce. If you didn't know about integration, go do a Trailhead. Mm-hmm. If you didn't know how Site Builder works, or it's called Digital Experience Builder, go take a Trailhead or go try it. And all of a sudden, within 2-3 hours, suddenly you know so much more. Trailhead's one way to do that. I'm just excited that it's available for everybody now. We've had it for about a year internally. And I think it just came out maybe a couple, 2-3 months ago for everybody else. And so download Trailhead Go, get badges if that makes you happy. But above all, just go read the sections that are relevant to you, because I guarantee you'll learn something.
I think it's a great idea. I have not used Trailhead Go myself. I do use Trailhead and I've tried using it on mobile. And you know, it takes a little while to load everything. So I think that this really helps it move a lot faster, which is super cool. And I have to say, you know, Trailhead has been a tremendous win for our team, because I tend to focus on people who are really, really skilled, but are not yet, they're not kind of Salesforce proficient already. You know, it's like, you know, we're going to interview him sometime in the future, but I have a gentleman on our team who I met because he helped me take a couch upstairs off of TaskRabbit. If you remember that, you know, that app, right? So I met him. I could see as we were trying to take a really heavy couch upstairs that he was cool under pressure. He was like, really like thinking about philosophy. He liked kind of the puzzle and the complexity. And by the time we were done with that, I was just like, have you ever thought about learning Salesforce? And Trailhead was essentially the means by which, when we were going to do a new project or whatever, I would just give him 3 or 4 trails and say, look, go do that stuff, demo it back to us. Let's give you feedback. Let's add some revisions to it. And then you'll be ready to jump into this project with support, right?
Great.
And it's been tremendous. And I know I love it myself. I mean, there's just nothing like, you know, taking those tests or even doing the work in the playground and having it say, boom, right? You get, you know, you get double the points if you get it the first time, right?
Yeah, so, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's good. Good suggestion.
I was just checking. This thing is so great about with on my phone too, is it's already signed in. Like, it remembers who I am. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It remembers if I need to be on VPN for authentication or what I need to do. And I just have my list of my most recently viewed trails, badges, trails. I mean, it's just, trail mixes. And it's just so simple. It's just better. It takes, it leverages all the sort of instant on capabilities of phone apps and connects you back into what you were just working on, which it probably does it better actually than the desktop app or the web.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. And it's supported on Android and iPhone and great. And by the way, on a note to the prior element that source tracking is available on Developer and Developer Pro sandboxes.
Excellent.
Which makes it even better, because not everybody has Developer Pro sandboxes, but everybody has Developer.
Everybody has Developer. Good point.
So the tool, the trail that I'm going to emphasize this episode is one that I used. You know, we as part of this project we went live with last week, we had an Einstein chatbot, which was really cool. We've talked about it in prior episodes about how cool it was to set one up. You set one up on SMS. We had one both on web as well as SMS. And sometimes we were noticing that the chatbot was taking up to 10 seconds to load. And usually, you know, there's a lot of files that go into web pages. And so usually that means there's like a 404 or something that like it's waiting on, like, okay, it's going to wait till it times out. And so figuring out what that is can be really hard. And so I was looking inside Chrome. It has a developer tools area, and people notice this for like looking at source code and things like that. If you're kind of a point and click developer, sometimes
I think
you may
if
not
you've
go
done
back
JavaScript,
there.
You've probably used developer tools.
Yeah, there's the console. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This one, this section is one that's called Network Timeline. And what it does is it provides like a visual picture of, hey, here's all the stuff that loaded the last time you refreshed. And here are the ones that took a really long time. And actually, here is the disposition of those, right? So you'll see things like 200, like everything was okay, right? People know or they know about a 404 page, right?
Right.
Page not found. And so you'll find components. So we found two components that were getting 404 pages that were essentially Salesforce resources that we don't control, right? Like we're just putting the embedded chat code on the website, but there were two resources that were getting 404s. And so Salesforce went and figured out what was going on and resolved that. And so now the chatbot is back to what it should be. But it was that little tool that comes with my browser that I never knew about, that it had this network timeline. And I found it useful in a lot of arenas now. So now you can look and see, even on a Salesforce page, you're like, oh, wow. I have three custom components on this page. I have large list views, right? So it's going to show me what is taking all the time before that page renders to my user. And I really recommend it too, because people, there's been a complaint that when people go from Classic to Lightning, they say, you know, it just feels slower, you know? And some of that is not necessarily related to Lightning being slower to deliver to your computer. There's also time that your computer takes to actually render and draw the page, which can still feel like a delay. So this is a neat way also to make use of, to figure out, hey, what's loading on this page that might be, you know, the page isn't drawing until it finishes that last, I think as you called it, that kind of big tent, big pole in the tent. And I can help eliminate that to get everything moving much faster.
Yeah, that tool is awesome. I've used it too a lot last year. This time I was working with a customer who was analyzing the load time of their Service Cloud console page. And they really want to get down to 3 seconds. And when we started without any tuning, it was at like 5-6 seconds. And we basically had a page that had every possible component that they would want on there. And there were, I forget what all the arrangements were. And they also happened to be running on Citrix, which was a whole other element to affecting performance. Because you basically, like you said, the page loads and then it depends on your CPU on your laptop. To actually assemble the page quickly. And the speed of your laptop will affect how fast your page comes together. So we looked at, we used the dev tools to look at that performance, the network performance, look at what was happening. Because we were inside Salesforce, and this might work also on the digital experience, on the communities, but in the Salesforce setup menu, you can turn on debug mode. And what that does is when you look at the execution of your page, with it on, you can see the names of the functions that are being called to load the page. If debug mode is off, you just see like these obfuscated function names, function ABCQR. There are these things that JavaScript makes up to make the page smaller,
like
shorter.
It compresses it's a compressed all those files.
Right.
Thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So with debug mode on, it doesn't get compressed. The page loads longer, but it actually gives you visibility in a very detailed way into what's happening on the page. The other way I look at this, I use that tool, is to look at the style sheets. And if I want to tweak the style sheet on my community, I'll right click on the part of the page I'm trying to figure out or to change. I click on the inspect menu element that pops up and it jumps me into the developer tools on the right-hand side to the point of the DOM, the document object model, where that page is being defined. And I can actually then go into the web developer tools, change the style sheet on that part of the page, override it, see if it gives me the change I need real time on my community. And then I can take that change back and put it into my community builder and I can override the style sheet there. Those are the two main ways I've used that developer tools feature.
Very nice. And I think it's also, there's a similar tool on Opera and on Firefox
too. Well.
Yep. Very cool.
Yep. And like you said, like if you're a JavaScript developer, because there's a console, if you ever print out debug statements in your JavaScript code, it's going to end up in your developer tools console. I don't think I ever put that together because I'm not a front-end developer. I'm sure front-end developers on the phone, on the podcast are going like, dude, you need to go back to school. Yeah, I guess I do on that area, but that's not what I've been doing for the past 15 years. So, but anyways, just so you know, like as we go more and more towards LWC, Lightning, JavaScript, that web developer tools is going to be super important to people developing custom components and analyzing the load time of just your component, making sure it's fast.
That's good. Well, you know, Eric, I always appreciate how honest you are, right? About, you know, about what you know and what you're still looking to learn, right? And I think that's so important. So as we move into our next segment, you know, you might have more to talk about there, but right, we've kind of combined, you know, what we're excited about or something noteworthy that is inspiring. Maybe you want to start about, you know, what you found out on that topic.
Sure. I think the quick summary of this is what was inspiring to me this week was the success I had on a project that was undefined and that was unexpected. Monday, I come into work, you know, good day, catching up with people, things like that. Monday night at like 5 o'clock, I get an invitation to a meeting at 7 o'clock the next morning because my customers got people in India and they want to be on a call where they talk about integrating Salesforce to another third-party cloud service. And I like those projects. So it's of course, yeah, sure. Get me on that call. It's fine. We have that call and I end up emailing the third-party web service counterparts who are also on that call. So it was us, my customer, and this third party, people all working together, trying to see, you know, describe the problem and see how we can fix it. I end up emailing the sales engineers from the third party and saying, hey, if you got any questions about Salesforce, let me know. I'm happy to stay in touch as we work on this. And they emailed me later and said, basically, yeah, let's see if we can do something together. And so for the next day and a half, I found myself excited and intrigued, learning about connecting to a new system I'd never seen before. How does it work? Corners of the internet that I never had to worry about, like authentication keys and authentication key formats, because that's what this other service needs. Mm-hmm. And so I'd say, I guess the inspiring thing is it was successful. And within a day or two, we figured out what we needed to do to get the connection going and get some data going back and forth. The other thing I think that is always inspiring for me, maybe it's my personality type, is having learned something. It was a struggle. I'm frustrated to this day. Right now, I still have problems I haven't fixed on this integration and I'm irritated. But I hope that turns into elation when I finally figure out the bug. For me, I was a computer science major. Whenever I solved bugs, it was rewarding. And I've said so many times, the best thing about computer science is it is a succession of successes. Because your bug is a roadblock, but then you get over it. Roadblock, get over it. Roadblock, get over it. And it's just rewarding. The whole debugging process was probably my favorite part about programming. And you know, so at the end of, you know, Wednesday, I was like, all right, we did it.
That's cool. I actually didn't know you were a CS major. You know, you think you know somebody after 15 years.
Yeah, no. Yeah, right? I don't know if I hide that. As a sales engineer, I've been so, my salespeople's eyes roll back in their heads when I start talking about databases and APIs, because, you know, if we have a business person on the phone, this is more back in the day when I was talking to business people and less IT people. But if I get too technical with non-technical people, their eyes roll back. So yeah, maybe I'm used to it. Nice.
I think it's 17 years now. 2004 is 2021.
Yeah, we met in 2004.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Amazing.
What about you? What was your excited about?
Well, I want to highlight one thing before we jump off, because you probably wouldn't mention this, you know, because of, you know, such a humble guy you are, but there is an element of, you know, being a distinguished technical architect at Salesforce is a pretty esteemed position. It's a very difficult one to get to. And so one who it's often a misnomer that people think, well, just because I know a lot, if I know a lot, that means I don't say that I don't know a lot. Right. But the more you learn, the more you recognize, the more you don't know, and the more you need other people's contribution. And so the willingness of you to be honest with where the kind of the end of the road is, as far as what I've done before, or what I, the direction I feel I have, allows other people to then kind of build on to your road. Right. It's almost like this collaborative map that you're building together. And because you're so clear of like, you know, I haven't done that before, I don't know really what to do there, it enables someone the freedom and the welcome to come in and be like, well, here, Eric, I think this might help you. And so there's this really, this dynamic willingness and initiative to help versus somebody who says, well, I know it. I don't need anything from you. I'll figure it out myself. Right. Like that, that's not an inspiring place.
Yeah. It could be my personality. You know, I think that there's a couple things I've learned. One is I've learned of the imposter syndrome. And isn't that what it's called? It's when you think that you're an imposter because you feel like an imposter, because who am I to say that I'm the expert in XYZ? I don't know. But it turns out that you actually do know a lot about what you do know about. And in a room of people, they all know what they know about, but they don't know what you know about. And so as I've, you know, gone on in my career, I'm way more comfortable saying, asking the question of something that's probably a stupid question. And in my opinion, you can ask anything once, you just can't ask it again to the same people. And then not knowing, I got help on this project from a woman in Australia who works for MuleSoft. She doesn't know me, but I put it out there and I said, I've exhausted what I know how to do myself on Slack. I put this, and does anybody have a lead on how to take, you know, this kind of key format and get it over to this key store? And what do I need to do? Because I'm kind of stumped. I got two people who I didn't know reply back to me, and one of them got on the phone with me the next day and gave me some new tips that were not findable on Google, because I spent a lot of time on Google searching every permutation of the keywords that I thought were relevant. And only by talking to this person, not only did I sort of re-inspired that there is a future and I can keep working on this problem, but but I learned about a new tool that I didn't didn't know about. So when I lived in France a long time ago, and one of the tips for getting help from a stranger on the street in France is to say, hello, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you. That's like protocol in Paris. You can't start with hello. We can't start with, I need something. You have to start with, hello, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you. And then you say, but I have a little problem. And when you let someone know that you have a problem, there is something that happens on the other end.
Empathy or something.
Yeah,
right?
that brings them towards your problem and they want to help you solve it. So
nice.
Anyways,
can you
that's
say
a tangent on.
Can you say it in French for us?
Yeah, sure. Excusez-moi de vous déranger, j'ai un petit problème.
It's beautiful. Sound like it's like a nice warm piece of cake, you know?
Yeah, sure. Well, you gotta learn to say it really nicely and smoothly, because it's your opening to success with a stranger when you're trying to get by, like, where's the metro? Where's this restaurant? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I'm lost. Which alley do I go down to get back to the main plaza? Because I don't know my way. I'm turned around, you know? So there was no GPS back in the days when I was learning this. So you couldn't pull up Google Maps and go, which direction am I facing?
No, it's a good point. I mean, it's a really good point that we can learn from about, you know, how we solicit other people's help in a way that makes them want to help us. Cool. Well, I think, you know, what I'm excited about is there's, you know, my hometown is Fresno. I was born there. I lived on farms, you know, for 9 years out there. And so there's an organization called Bitwise that has, you know, kind of like a, it's inspired, one of these community inspired dreaming events, right? So, you know, Tahoe Dreaming, I've been a part of, and it was NorCal
like
Dreaming.
A music festival?
No, it's like a Salesforce kind of user group, you know, where it's more regional. So it's kind of like Dreamforce. Dreamforce is like the global gathering. And then there's all of these smaller kind of regional events where they're put on by volunteers. And so there's one out of Fresno, it's called SenCal Dreamin'. And what's amazing is it's, you know, during COVID times, like these things are remote. So now you can join and learn from anywhere. And so it's very much like, you know, like Trailhead Go in a sense, but a more live event. So what I'm excited about is, you know, I'm giving a presentation there called I Love My CRM. And, you know, one of the mantras that, that I espouse a lot is that, you know, most of the time, CRM is like a dreadful topic, especially to like salespeople and whatever. It's like Big Brother. It's just used to like track me and make me accountable to my reports and all of this, where I really think there's such potential for CRM to really serve users, to really make it to where like
we've all seen it done both ways.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, going back to Siebel in the 90s, anytime a CRM is designed to please management, management does need to buy off on CRM. But you got to design it with the users in mind.
Absolutely.
Like, what makes it better for them?
Absolutely.
How do you facilitate the quoting process? How do you do less data entry? Can you make their lives better by integrating it to your order management system? Like, there's things that are like, it costs money to do, but once you do it, then like you step into a faster moving world. That's awesome.
Yes, but yeah, absolutely.
It can always be a sales prevention tool.
Exactly. Well, one of the phrases I've heard is that, you know, the users are always, they're always tuned into what's in it for me radio. right? Oh, sure. We FM, and you need to play.
Yeah, we FM.
You need to play the hits every day, right?
You do. And, you do. I have not heard the radio analogy and the hits every day thing, but I've been talking about what's in it for me for a long time. And the me is the user.
Yes.
You got to make Salesforce give me something. What's in it for me?
Yes.
You know, when I log in, it needs to like help me sell better, help me find my key experts, whatever.
Well, the tough part, and I think this is what my presentation is going to focus on. The irony is that what's in it for me when you or I ask it, we are not the user. And so that's this odd part, is that what I would do for myself is probably not what my users actually need or want, because I'm immersed in the product all day. I don't have the time constraints. I don't live the fractional method on mobile that they're having to engage this information and this business process. And so what I'm excited about is really helping provide some concrete examples about how to cause difficult audiences like salespeople, legal, right? People to fall in love with the CRM and say, I'm so glad we have this, because I could not do what I can do now if I didn't have it. That's a totally different perspective than I only do this because I have to, and therefore I only fill out half the fields. I put a space in all the rest so that my validation rule passes, and I just submit the record and I just say, so be it, right?
Are you saying users actually put blank data in their fields that are required just so they don't have to fill them in?
Really? Or they put fake stuff? ABC, 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 ABC.
Oh my God. Right? Data nightmare. Yeah, that's what happens though. I mean, that is the user response when requirements for data are onerous. They're just going to, how many times have we all gone to a lead form on somebody's website and just said, my name is Bob Jones, 123 Bob Lane, Bob California, 90210.
Yep.
You just fill it out just to get by. And I love your topic. I can't wait to see your content. Will it be streamed? Can we all join?
You can all join. Yeah. So actually, if you go to johnklein.com/CCD, it'll take you directly to the registration page. And I would encourage everybody, because it's remote, it's all on Zoom. So everybody can sign up, and I love it. And going back to another simple analogy, right? People talk about the carrot and the stick, and most of the time they emphasize the stick rather than the carrot, right? They make it, well, you can't get your commission if you don't put it in Salesforce. You can't get credit for that deal if it's not in Salesforce, right? Where I certainly recommend the carrot and the toothpick, not the stick, right? Something very small, right? It's there and it pokes, right? But the overwhelming incentive is like, I love carrots. I love purple carrots and orange carrots, and I love them baked, and I love them dipped, right? And I love them sliced. There's so many ways, because Salesforce gives us great tools. There are so many ways to make it overwhelming so that adoption is a non-issue in the business. Essentially, what they're doing is they're knocking down your door as management, saying, Salesforce does so much for me. I love it. Can it do more? Can it do more for me? Because I can produce more, right? So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, cool. That'll be really cool. Can't wait to see it.
Good stuff, man. Well, another good show in the wrap. And please, anyone, if you have feedback for us, you can tweet us on Twitter. Go ahead, Eric.
Mine's Eywell, Eyewell.
Yes. And mine is at John Kline. That's JonCline. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends.
All right. We'll see you later.
One silver lining to the current times is the ability to attend great online events that would otherwise be missed because they're not in your local area. A great example is Send Cal Dreamin', coming up Tuesday, June 22nd and the 23rd from 9 to noon. It's not the full day, just the mornings on both days. Join me and other great speakers helping make the most of your Salesforce investment. It will cost only your valuable time and attention. More details at johnkline.com/CCD.